Well, there's so many things that have been changing in this industry for so, like...
Daily.
Like, something as simple as, like, demo length.
What's
the appropriate length? And how much production should you have on it? Should you have any? Should you not?
And where are they relevant today? Because it used to be where you could market your demo. And today, the demo gets you an agent. And I will still market it. But I'm telling you right now, better than a demo are social media followers. Because the buyers want to see that you've got 10,000 people who are going to tune into that episode.
Yeah.
Or hear that or buy that game.
Yeah.
And for a fan-based voiceover, it's all about followers.
And then – but then – which is an interesting conundrum because it's like I can make a killer reel for myself. I can specialize my reels. But how do I generate –
business?
Followers. Like that aspect.
We can talk about that if you want to because it's part of what I teach now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a class I call VO Group Therapy where I take people's career, where they're at and where they want to be and connect the dots.
Bob.
And usually I find that people just, they're lost.
Yeah.
They may be great. They've got the demo.
Yeah.
But they don't know what to do with it now. Where do they go? And they commit suicide every day on social media by saying the wrong thing. By posting the wrong thing. And they don't even realize it because nobody is going to call you from CBS or Ogilvy and say, we don't want to work with you and here's why.
Oh,
they just don't understand why they're not getting called in or why they're not getting bookings. A lot of it's just, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And they're posting stuff, opinions, negatives.
Yep.
And nobody wants to work with that.
Yeah. Hey, what's up? What's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. I'm keeping all that, by the way.
Oh, okay, great.
Welcome to another episode of All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. I'm your host, Kiff VH. And with me in studio at lovely studio space, my first time here. I'm very excited to be
It was a fun trip to get here.
It was. And we circled around.
We did. And by the way, the Burbank Rouse is lovely. Just saying.
If you don't recognize his voice, you certainly know his work. Can I use the modifier legendary at this point? Are you comfortable with legendary?
You know what? If you'd like, it's not something I or my mother would have even said, but sure, why not?
Okay. You stood on the stage at the Hollywood Bowl.
I did.
Qualify.
Okay, I got to tell you something.
Yes.
That was probably – there are certain things in your career where you're like, oh, my God, look what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm standing on the wings waiting to go out. I'm looking out in the middle of that going, the Beatles were there.
Yeah.
That was pretty intense.
Oh, it was so cool to see you up there.
Oh, thanks, man.
It was an amazing show. Bob Bergen is my guest. The lovely and talented Bob. We met
Chicago.
Well, just back in Chicago.
Yeah.
You came and taught a fantastic 2-day animation.
Thank you. And all I can remember was that it was the studio that was owned by the Pillsbury Doughboy, which I thought was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And when you walked in, there were 150,000 Pillsbury Doughboys everywhere.
There's a blanket of the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yeah. There are big boys, little boys, rubber boys, plush boys. There was thousands of them.
Oh, man. Joby Cherney.
There we go.
So that's it. Oh, man. That was a transformative workshop for me, too. It was right before I moved out here. And I'd already been in conversations with CESD, who I knew we had relationships with and stuff. But that workshop with you really gave me the confidence in a way to push past where I was.
Well, so you were one of those actors. You know, every once in a while as a teacher I see somebody with the it factor. And you had the it factor.
Oh,
and sometimes all you need is reassurance at a class or a workshop where, yep, my instincts are right.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing. You just need someone to say, yeah, follow, use the force.
Yeah.
Use the force. And you did. I mean, from the moment you stepped up to the mic, I was like, well, he doesn't need this class, but you might need this opportunity to realize, yep, I'm doing the right thing.
That's so true. That's so true. That sometimes you take classes for the things that you need that isn't necessarily the curriculum. It's
a mindset.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, there have been times when, you know, I always tell people, don't make a demo till you're ready. And the question I always get is, how do you know you're ready? When you don't ask that question. When doing voiceover copy is as much of an instinct and a knee-jerk just habit as brushing your teeth. Now, you might have the skills as an actor. You might know how to interpret copy. You might be able to give consistent, great reads.
Yeah.
But if your mind isn't ready to go out there and compete, then you're going to let yourself get in your way as you try. And as talented as you are, you're not ready. So there are different levels of ready to do this. Sometimes it's I'm ready to pursue in my local market. Sometimes it's I'm ready to make a trip to the larger markets. But that word ready is relative to who you are, where you are in your career, and, well, what do you want out of your career? You know, I mean, if you want to do local spots, you can do that anywhere. You want to do network promos and animation, you got to be in the major markets.
Right.
And I find, you know, I talk to people all the time online every day of my life. People say, I want to do this. And then they give me the miles of excuses why they can't. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Neither does the business. You know, I mean, when I was getting into this business, I knew exactly what I wanted. And it meant I've got to do certain things as an actor to train. Yeah. I need to meet certain people. I just decided when I was 14, I'm going to rub elbows with the people who have the career I want. And I'm just going to hang with them. And this was advice I got from Don LaFontaine, from Dawes Butler, from Casey Kasem, from Steve Schatzberg, bless his heart, Danny Dark, who all said to me, if you want to float to the top, do not hang around with people on the same or lesser boat than you.
Mm.
Hang with the people who already have the career. And eventually, organically, you're going to be in the business. Whether you're working or not, people are going to associate you with the people at the top of the voiceover industry. So this is before the internet. So today, people are hanging around with themselves or lesser than.
Mm.
And they're not taking the leap to hang around the Rob Paulsons or the Maurice LaMarches, if they want animation.
Sure.
Or if they want promo. You know, you're doing a lot of promo these days. Joe Cipriano. I mean, there are people that are just – they're known for this business, for what they do.
Yeah.
And you've got all these people asking advice to people who either are on the same boat or not even on that boat.
Yeah.
And it's perpetuating this generation who is stuck walking in a circle because they don't know how to get out of it. And a lot of it takes risk. You got to risk leaving that herd. You don't want to be in it. You want to be ahead of it.
Yeah.
But it takes risk.
Going back when you were first getting started, or when you first had the itch to get started, and you're 14.
I was five when I got the itch.
Five.
Well, I told my mom and dad I wanted to be Porky Pig when I was five.
Are you kidding me?
No, at five.
Porky was your target from when you were five.
I didn't want to get into voice. I didn't know. Well, first of all, you're 5 years old. You don't know what voiceover
is. You
want
to be a cartoon. Yogi Bear is my Porky
Pig. There
you
go.
Yogi Bear is my Porky Pig.
So, I mean, you know, I'm 5 years old watching Looney Tunes, and I'm just enamored by that character. And I didn't realize that was a job, let alone something that a person did. That was Porky Pig. And my mom would tell stories that she'd be in the kitchen doing, like, you know, Saturday morning dishes. And she'd hear a line on the TV, and then she'd hear the line again. And she thought, well, that's strange. Why are they repeating that line? And she stood in the doorway and watched me mimicking Porky Pig back to Porky Pig. Now, I was a kid. My voice hadn't changed.
Right.
But I figured out this formula to a stutter. And my mom was like, how do you do that? I said, I don't know. I just do it. And I said, I want to be Porky Pig. My mom said, you can't be Porky Pig. You're Jewish. And I didn't even know what that meant. I had no idea what that meant because we were really bad Jews. We had a menorah next to a Christmas tree every December. So that didn't mean anything to me. My mom was probably doing dishes that had bacon on it. So but that was my goal. And, you know, as I got older, before the internet, before even VCRs, I had a tape recorder next to the television, and I would record cartoons, and I would memorize them.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I learned, oh, there's this dude named Mel Blanc who's doing all these characters. And I would find, you know, if he was on a talk show, The Tonight Show, or the Mike Douglas Show, or whatever talk show, Dinah Shore.
Yeah.
And my dad took a job in L.A. when I was 14.
Oh, wow.
We were in the Midwest at the time. We moved, and I was like, really, Dad? For me? Not for me. He just took a job here. And I just moved here and picked up the phone, and I found Mel Blanc in the phone book, and I called him up. And I researched his phone number in the phone book. I actually recorded the conversation. It's on my website. That's illegal. People, don't do that. It's illegal to record people without telling them.
Yes.
And during the course of the conversation, he mentioned the name of the studio he was working at that week. Didn't say the day or the time, but he mentioned the name.
Uh-huh.
And I called the studio pretending to be his assistant, trying to find out when he's actually going to be there. And I said, hi, I'm calling for Mr. Blank's appointment and I made this up, Thursday at 9. And they said, no, we have him on the books for Wednesday at 11. I went, oh, you're right. I'm looking at the wrong calendar. I'm so sorry. So I said to my mom, I'm skipping school. on Wednesday to go watch Mel Blanc work at the studio. And she said, that's cool. So we got to the studio and I told the receptionist, hi, we're guests of Mel Blanc. And the receptionist goes, oh, he's in that booth over there. And we walked in his booth and I said to his producer, hi, we're really good friends with the receptionist. And she said we could watch. And we watched. So that was – I mean, that was all – you know, just a – that's how I kind of took an interest – from a kid to, okay, now I'm in L.A. Now I'm watching the guy doing this.
Yeah.
Now I'm realizing, oh, he's still doing this, isn't he? And my voice hadn't changed. So I thought, well, I need to learn how to do this. So I called Hanna-Barbera, and they referred me to Dawes Butler. And Dawes Butler was Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
He was everything Mel Blanc wasn't.
Everything he wasn't.
Yeah.
Huckleberry Hound.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's right. But – so I started studying voiceover. I studied acting. I studied improv. And the bottom line is it all started as a five-year-old kid who wanted to be this cartoon pig. And I was that focused. I was that driven. I was that determined. But here's the interesting thing that I keep trying to tell people that, you know, I'm 55 and I'm still just as driven. And I work every day just as hard not to stay where I'm at, to do more. Because as you know, we talked about this before the mics were turned on, but the business has changed so much.
Yeah.
If you really want this, or if you want medicine, or if you want law, or if you want to be a school teacher, you've got to be driven. You've got to want it more than anybody else and be willing to do more than anybody else.
That's right. We watched the phrase in our house, both Sherry and I say to each other all the time is we're quoting The Untouchables and it's, you know, what are you prepared to do?
Yeah.
And then what are you prepared to do? How hard are you prepared to work? You're going up against the best in the industry.
Sure.
And the best coming up every day on another bus or
not even on a bus. They're in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh yeah, with a box.
And they're fantastic. Mm. I did a post on Facebook today on I forget which page on VO, but the discussion was asking about coaches and teachers. And then people started talking about, you know, hey, I'm on a budget. What can I do on a budget? And I'm always telling people, I want you to take off your I want to be an actor hat and put on your agent hat, CEO hat of a studio, casting director hat. Are you looking for somebody who did this fast on a budget or do you want brilliance? And, you know, just when I was getting into this, a handful came to the top and the rest were mediocre. Hmm. I wanted to be brilliant. It used to be we went to voiceover class to be great actors. Today, people are getting into voiceover to make money. I swear to you, I don't wake up every day trying to make money. I don't wake up every day going, I hope I book this. I wake up every day saying the mic is my happy place. My booth is my happy place. I'm at my most creative in front of a microphone just auditioning.
Yeah.
And if I book it, that's circumstantial. That's fortunate. But I didn't get into this to be a successful or even a rich actor. Yeah. I got into this because acting feeds my soul.
Yeah.
The way food feeds my body. I have to act. But people are doing it differently today. And it's because of the internet.
Are you here? You're hearing that. You got to hear it in the reads, right?
Of course.
In the content and what we hear everywhere in commercials and – I mean not to denigrate any of it, but it's present and it's ever present. And how do you – you know, I guess in that landscape in a way, the best way to continue to navigate. And I feel that same way of like I got to play so-and-so in the room – in my room today.
Yeah.
And it was good enough that I felt comfortable to be able to – not even comfortable. I felt proud to send it off and say, here's my painting of this iconic character or this new character.
Or this commercial or whatever.
Or this commercial, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this is that expression and who knows what will happen but to get to that place.
Well, you're probably like me because, you know, if you get to a place in your career where you're fortunate enough to be reading every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, your agent calls you up and say, hey, you booked that blah, blah, blah spot. It's next Thursday at LA Studios.
Awesome.
Now, you, like me, probably have to go through your files and refresh your memory.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, on a busy day, I might read for 15, 20 things.
Yeah.
And if this was 5 days ago, that might be 100 auditions ago.
Yeah.
And I usually say to my agent, did I read for that? Yeah, you did. Okay. And they'll usually send me the file so I can familiarize myself with it. But
yeah.
You know, I read and I forget. I read and I forget because, let's be honest, the odds of booking are slim.
Yep.
There's too many of us.
Yeah.
But those of us who are working, it's a numbers game. You've got to be reading for this many for the opportunities to book. But I don't hold on to the audition unless it's like that, like, you know, it's you're down to the final two people.
Yeah.
You know, you're on a very strong avail, you know.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And something I really, really want.
Yeah.
But most of the time, even those, I let go.
Do you have them stacked on your hard drive? Do you like? I mean, what I've my situation is I just folders auditions 2019.
That's it.
Folder.
I have,
and then I have to go
since my first home studio. I have every audition. Kev, I have every script I've ever worked on in my career since 1982. Every script. And I have hard copy scripts because those were the days that they would actually have messengers. Bring them to your house.
Oh, man, yeah.
And then now I have them, you know, just in a hard drive.
Yeah.
You know, and just backed up. But I also have – I'm old-fashioned. I have a Google Calendar that my agent and I share to write it. But I also have physical books. And I have a library, and I have a storage room behind my house. And I have a library of books, and I can look back there and see in 1989, 1990, first audition for Looney Tunes. Callback for Looney Tunes, final callback for Chuck Jones for Looney Tunes, booking for Looney Tunes. So I can see my entire career just in calendars, you know, in day planners.
That's fantastic.
It also makes you feel old.
Yeah, I understand that, but then, you know, that means you've been working in this, you've been at it, and living your dream.
And don't take it for granted.
Yeah.
I mean, I will still drive on the lot at Disney or Warner Brothers and go, really? Still? Me? Really? And it blows me away. It blows me away. I mean, there are actors who are very successful.
Yeah.
And their biggest angst in life is a call on a Friday at 2:30. Hey, can you be at West Side blah, blah, blah at 5 o'clock for an audition? Is it radio or TV? Because that will, you know, that'll be a deciding factor. Well, TV pays more. As opposed to the hungry actor who goes, I'll be there at midnight if they want me.
That's right.
You know, and if I'm – here's the deal. Do you know the show Inside the Actor's Studio?
Yes.
Okay. I always say if I ever get famous enough to be on that show and they say, what's your least favorite word? It's avail. Because here's the bottom line. I'm avail. If I have in my book that I'm going to Vietnam on vacation, I will find a studio and be avail for that radio spot.
That's right.
For anything. Why? Because I love what I do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going on vacation next week, and I line up studios everywhere I go. I'm like, yeah, I have a travel gear that I take. But, oh, my gosh. Unless it's something that I'm like, man, I just want to check out. Zone. Like if I'm going on a cruise next year, I'm not going to have travel equipment on a cruise.
Yeah, you're not available. But like that feeling, I'm right there with you. Like we went to Disneyland or Disney World. I'm sorry, last holiday season,
right.
And like you know that stretch from December 22nd to January 3rd where you're. Like, I don't know about you, but like I have a really hard time just resting my mind during that time.
I've got to be really honest with you. That's my busiest time.
Is it really?
Always. Every year. And here's why. Because I think everybody else checks out. Now, I might, you know, plan a trip or something.
Sure.
But for some – and, you know, some agencies close like it seems like from Thanksgiving to January 2nd.
Yeah.
My agent never closes. I mean, they may have closed the office during the major holidays, but they are work. I get emails from my agent on Christmas Eve, New Year's Day, because they're working that hard. You know, they have to work harder than we do.
That's
today,
right.
Because there's so much stuff around the country.
That's right. Just to remain competitive and viable and all that stuff.
Well, it used to be we're an agent. We're talking all over the place. I don't see a linear conversation here.
Is
that cool?
That's the nature of the show.
Cool.
Is that we sit and talk.
I like that.
Yeah.
It used to be, I mean, when I got my first agent, Casey Kasem got me my first agent.
What?
Yeah, Casey Kasem.
I'm going to put a bookmark there because I'd like to know that.
Right, remember Casey Kasem.
Casey Kasem. Got it.
My agent took me on when I said, what's a SAG card? I mean, he groomed me. I'd studied voiceover for 4 years, acting, improv. I was ready. But I didn't know. Okay, I landed the agent who represented Casey Kasem, Mel Blanc, Orson Welles, June Foray, Hal Smith, the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
In fact, my first audition in his office, and this was when they just began doing auditions in the agent's office. My first audition was with Orson Welles. And I'm sitting in the lobby with my copy. You know what that's like, sitting in the lobby with the copy.
Yeah.
And in walks Orson Welles. And I'm sitting there going, can you swear on your podcast?
Go ahead.
I'm not going to do the whole swear, but I was saying, oh, my God, it's Orson freaking Welles, okay? And he sat next to me, and he was very sweaty, and he smelled bad, but I didn't care. It was
Orson Welles.
Okay. And he looks over at me, and he goes, I believe we're reading together. Would you like to go out and rehearse? And I was like, mm-hmm. So we go outside, and we ran through the copy, and he goes, that'll do. I went, Orson Welles, Citizen Kane said that'll do. Oh, my gosh. So we go into the booth. The booth was the size of half of this table. So you guys listening can't see this, but it's not a large table.
Right.
And he and I are standing in this tiny little booth facing each other. And his stomach is enormous and it's touching mine. And he just reeked of cigars and cottage cheese. I don't know if Orson didn't shower that often, but that was the essence I had. And when we were done, I had a giant round wet mark on my shirt that smelled like cigar and cottage cheese. And all I kept thinking was, I am never washing this shirt. And sadly, it evaporated. I couldn't keep it. But I think I washed it. But the bottom line is, my first audition was with Orson Welles. Didn't book it. I don't know if he did, but I was blessed from the get-go.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I hit the voiceover jackpot with my first agent. I didn't realize how fortunate I was. But back then, they groomed you.
Hmm.
They would take a fresh off the boat talent where they saw they've got that something. And the agent's name was Don Pitts.
Hmm.
Don would have me come in after school and practice auditioning.
Man.
and give me pointers. And tell me how to, when I had an audition, how to carry myself, what a callback is like, what to do differently at a callback. He also said, take risks. Mm-hmm. Give them what they're asking for, but don't be afraid to infuse something interesting, something different. That's what's going to make you stand out. When I got into the business, there were three networks doing Saturday morning cartoons and a handful of syndicated cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
It was so hard to break in back then. Today, Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, Sprout, streaming, primetime. Every major studio has a thriving animation department. There's more product today and more opportunities today than ever before. It's so much easier to break in than ever before.
Yeah.
But there's more people.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man. Casey Kasem.
Casey Kasem.
Tell me about Casey Kasem getting you
Don Pitts. So a friend of the family knew Casey.
Uh-huh.
And I was graduating high school, and they had him send me an autographed picture as a high school graduation present. And it came from Casey's house. So his home address was there. So I sent him a thank you note. Dear Mr. Kasem, I so appreciate this picture. By the way, I want your job. And I included my phone number. And like a week or so later, the phone rang. I said, hello. And he goes, hi, Bob. It's Casey Kasem. And I said, okay, that is the worst impression of Casey Kasem I have ever heard. Who is this? And he goes, all right, listen. Hi, Bob. It's Casey Kasem. And I said, do you put it on? He goes, a little bit. He goes, it's a persona that I put on for radio and TV. But he really did have a conversational, demeanor.
Yeah.
But he was there once I realized it was really him. And I said, oh, I apologize for not believing it was you. And he goes, listen, I got your note. Do you have a demo? No. Do you have an agent? No. Are you a union? No. He goes, okay, listen, make a homemade demo, which, as you and I both know, you can't do that today. It's too competitive.
Right.
But I had a little portable tape recorder. I did 85 different voices. I gave it to him. I mailed it to him. Don Pitts, the agent, at the time was in the hospital, and I don't know why, but he was in an oxygen tent.
Oh, my gosh.
At Cedars-Sinai. And Casey Kasem went to Cedars with a portable tape recorder and through the plastic played him my demo.
Oh, my God.
And when he got out of the hospital, he was fine. Don called me up. And Don sounded like he, at one time in his life, swallowed molasses with glass chips. He had a voice like this. Hey, Bob, it's Don Pitts. How are you? Listen, got your demo from Casey. God, you're good. You're good. You're good. He always talked in triplicate. You're good. You're good. You're good. I'd like to represent you. And I said, well, mister, I don't know what that means, but as long as it's after 3 o'clock because I've got school, okay. And so I went down there and I signed a contract, you know, with Don Pitts. I was with him for my first 5 years of my career.
Wow.
And,
oh, that's fantastic.
And I left Don Pitts because – and this was – it was a hard decision. Don went from this one agency to a company called at the time Joseph Hildfond and Ricks. It's now I think KMR.
Okay.
And for a good solid year, it was beyond slow for me. I wasn't reading for much and I'd met with some other agents. I called his assistant who's – a pretty good, well-known agent named Paul Doherty. And I said, Paul, I hate the idea of leaving Don, but it's just not happening for me. And Paul said, Chief, got to tell you, Chief, we love you here, but he's got so many heavy hitters and he doesn't really have to build anymore. So he said, off the record, Chief, follow your gut. So leaving Don was hard because you know he was the first guy that took me on. And I said, what's a SAG card?
Yeah.
But, you know, a risk. I had to take a risk. I had to go to a smaller agency who represented not quite as many superstars who was hungry and would work for me. And, you know, and Paul did okay for himself too.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
Tell me about the navigating the landscape of – well, I I'd like to hit you in two ways. One, yeah. I do want to get into – craft conversation a little bit with you in terms of, you know, your actor approach, your joy space that you're creating in. But then I also do want to talk about navigating the landscape, the kind of stuff that you talk about in VO group therapy.
Yeah, the business of the business.
The business of the business. And I feel like that particular part – look, in the information age, as you say, with the amount of opportunity that exists, but also the amount of freaking podcasts that are out there and books and resources that just simply weren't available to us.
Right.
We're the most valuable tool. I remember talking to Kari Walgren about this. It was like, this is the yellow pages at your local public library. We're the most valuable tool.
Absolutely.
For anything. I get an address and a phone number and a name.
That's
I can
right.
send. It's the world.
That's right.
And now it's – I can follow a casting director.
You can friend – and so we've got several platforms on social media. You got Facebook, you got Twitter, you got Instagram, you got LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And each one can be used for a different purpose. So, you know, I teach animation, voiceover, and I teach all over the country. And most people aren't ready to even think about pursuing. But what I'll tell them is right now you can prepare for your very first audition with Colette Sunderman. Colette Sunderman is an animation voice slash casting director, or Christy Reed, or Wes Gleason, or Charlie Adler. You can prepare right now. How? Go to IMDb and just surf their name and look at their body of work. And go and just click that one show and look at that IMDb list and look at those actors. And go to those actors' social media pages and you will see the agents that they're with. And you'll see a consistent group of agents, CESD, SBV, Atlas Talent, DPN, AVO, the major players.
Yeah.
Logic will tell you I need to be with one of those agents because they're the ones being called for these actors right now if I'm going to be in this league, in this game.
Yeah.
Then you go to the agent's website and you start listening to those demos. And you go, oh, that's how good I have to be. That's what a contemporary demo is. Connect with those actors. Who did your demo? Follow them on all these pages.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds so overwhelming and so vast, but start with a yellow legal pad or a computer. I don't care.
Yeah.
But just start bullet pointing. Just start bullet pointing ideas.
Hmm.
And every connection, every bullet point, I call it a dot. And eventually you're going to connect that dot. You're not going to know how you're going to connect it. You're not going to know where or when. But you're going to connect that dot. For instance, so in VO group therapy, and if it's a person in LA pursuing animation, I'll say to them, what do you want out of your career? And 9 out of 10 will say, well, I want to work doing what I love. And I said, and that's why you're not. Because that's what everybody wants. Now, specifically, What do you want? Because I'm telling you right now, the chances are specifically your doctor wanted to go to UCLA Medical School. Specifically, your accountant wanted to go to this business school, whatever. Specifically, in voiceover, what do you want? I want to work in animation. Not specific enough. Mm. Specifically, what do you want to do? And they start to sweat. It gets real emotional, Kiff. They get – because that's why I call it group therapy, because I really make them think.
Yeah.
And then eventually they're going to go, I want to work on Clarence on Cartoon Network. There you go. That's specific. Who casts it? I don't know. Why not? You want to work on it. Who casts it? Well, let's look together. Christy Reed. Christy Reed casts and voice directs this show. Isn't that interesting? Let's look up Christy Reed. Let's look up all the shows she's doing. Let's look up all the actors she's cast. Let's look at their agents. Wait, there's more. Clarence on IMDb. There are writers. There are producers. There are assistants. Today's assistant is tomorrow's showrunner. There are writers. You connect with the people that aren't the stars, that aren't the showrunners. The assistants, the writers, the background artists, the storyboard artists. Nobody's connecting with them.
Yeah.
But you connect with them. And what happens is, as your voiceover career organically takes off, as you promote what you're doing, and you promote the event, not the journey that got you there. Hmm. You don't talk about, hey, I've got an audition today.
Yeah.
You promote the end result, which is the product. But as you start doing this, they will organically start to see your career in motion. And as you start adding, all of a sudden now you're friends with Kari Wahlgren. And by the way, we're talking about the nicest people on the planet.
Nicest people.
Kari, Jess Harnell, Billy West,
yeah.
Dee Bradley Baker.
Oh, man.
I mean, we are – I mean, and you, my friend, we are blessed that – I don't know what it is about the voiceover industry compared to on camera, but we love each other.
Yeah.
And at a session, we are a mutual admiration society where I'm looking at these actors going, I am in debt to what they're teaching me right now. Did you – were you in I Know That Voice or did you see I Know That Voice?
I honestly have not seen it and I was not in it. I will.
See it. Because, and it's been years.
Yeah.
But at that premiere, I'm sitting in the audience with all of my fellow voice actors along with, you know, Andrea Romano and the people that put this together, and I'm learning. We never talk to each other. What's your process? What are you thinking about when you're creating characters? And I'm listening to Dee Bradley Baker talk about his process creating creatures, and I'm listening to James Arnold Taylor and Richard Horvitz and Janet Waldo, bless her heart. Mm-hmm. And it was people. It's a masterclass. And if I'm in this business 30 plus years learning. Everybody, the learning process never ends.
Yeah.
But we are so blessed that we have a community that loves each other, loves what we do. I don't feel jealousy. Do you feel jealousy?
No, I really don't.
I think there's a sense of competition, but it's also a – it is pretty common for me. It may not be for you. I don't know. But you get an email or a text from somebody, hey, did you read for so-and-so? If you didn't, call your agent. You're perfect for it. I just read for it. I get that all the time. I do that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the nature of this business.
It's the nature of it. I think – I don't know. It's funny how frequently that comment has come up in this context, in this conversation. And that – and from some of the best friends and nicest, kindest people reflecting that, like talking about that with Fred, with Tadashore.
Tadashore,
like, oh, God.
Saw him last night.
Oh.
There is never in the world been the most lovable teddy bear of a talent.
Yes.
Of a brilliant – by the way, have you ever been to a session and known Fred was there first because you put on the headphones and they're moist? You put on the headphones. Oh, Tadashore was here,
Fred
wasn't
was
he?
Here.
Yes. How about that? I have his DNA on my head right now. Can I get a wet wipe right now? Thank you.
Oh, man. Or the red syrup is half drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Or man. I adore that guy. He was one of the cats who like – I mean – just when I first got to town, just the general, like I ran into you at CESD.
Yeah.
Within my first couple months and
– yeah.
And I mean
– I was thrilled that you came out, man.
Oh.
I just knew for you, A, it's a matter of time and B, please, it'll be such a waste if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always tell people that when you're 95 years old on your deathbed, it is much easier to have failure than regret. If you tried and failed, at least you tried and failed. But if you're looking back going, man, what if I just went to California and tried this?
Yeah.
You can't get that back. But you can come out and try and not succeed. You know, I have very few regrets as an actor. The only one I've got, honestly, is that I never gave New York theater a shot.
Really?
Yeah. But I was working from 18 on as a voice actor. I was a tour guide at Universal the first 5 years out of high school to pay my bills.
Uh-huh.
But I was with Don Pitts auditioning and working. Not regularly. It took me 5 years before I could make a living at it. But I wish I had been a gypsy in New York and just walking the pavement and trying to get off Broadway, on Broadway, and to do that theater. I can't do it now. I can't walk away from my life now.
Yeah, but if the opportunity came to do
– In a heartbeat. And because of ISD and Source Connect and remote voiceover.
Yeah.
And Atlas Talent is my agent. They have a New York office.
That's great.
I would have plenty of representation.
Sure.
I think today more than any other time in broadcast history, if they want you, they will record you remotely.
Yeah.
So I never say never, but you know, I'm also in my mid-50s, and the idea of that lifestyle of, you know, 8 shows a week, that's tough.
Yeah, but the right show. The right show.
See, and that's the thing. You know, when you're an actor and you've just got that hunger to do something, you know. Was I doing my one-man show in Chicago when you did my class?
No, it wasn't running then.
Okay, because I did it at I.O.
Oh, did you really?
In Chicago, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and it was fun. It was a cute little space and they were really nice and, you know, these beautiful, wonderful improvisational actors who were just hungry to learn any little thing.
Man.
But yeah, I say it. In my mind, I'm like, oh, that sounds hard, but I will never say never.
Oh, man. You would love it.
I know. I know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you've been on the stage at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that can't be done.
This is very true. I'll tell you how that came about.
Yeah.
There's a show called – used to be called Bugs Bunny on Broadway.
Mm.
And it debuted, I guess, about 30 years ago. And it became Bugs Bunny at the Symphony. And I think the musical director is George Doherty.
Okay.
And he was doing a run at, I think, Lincoln Center in New York. And he asked me if I would pro bono record the, you know, please turn your cell phones off, don't open any candy wrappers, et cetera, before the show started, as some of the Looney Tunes. And I said, I'd be happy to. So, you know, I had, you know, Porky Pigs, you know, please make sure the cell phones are off. And Marvin the Martian, like,
and don't eat candy. It obstructs my view of Venus or whatever, you know.
And he was so sweet. And he goes, listen, I'd like to make – would you be interested in doing it an appearance at the Hollywood Bowl when I come to the Hollywood Bowl? And I'm like, doing what? And he said, tell the story of how you called Mel Blanc. I want to do a tribute to Mel Blanc and let's just do that. And I was like – okay. And he goes, is there anything else you can do? I said, well, you know what? I do a bit. I did a bit on in I Know That Voice where I teach people how to do Porky Pig. There's 18,500 seats, two nights, 18,500 I had doing Porky Pig. And when it was all over, I tried to contact the Guinness Book of World Records to see if I could get a world record as the world's largest voiceover class. And the only reason I didn't is because Guinness owns that. If I ever want to take credit or go on talk shows, they own that in the book. I mean, it's my record, but they own it, and I don't let anybody own anything I do other than myself. So, but
that's
anyway,
good.
It was so cool. Now, the rehearsal
was
terrifying because it was during the day, and I looked out and went, "Oh, that's big. That goes way back there."
But and when the lights are on, and you can see very clearly.
The sun was out.
Oh yeah.
When I actually went on, I couldn't see anything past the front of the stage. It didn't feel as scary.
Yeah.
But then I heard the roar of the laughter, and it was like, wow. It was. I've had two wow moments that were outside the booth in my career.
Yeah.
That was one of them.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was a reception at the White House. I know, right? Why would I go to the White House?
What?
I know. So – in the 90s, when George Bush Sr. was in office, my agent calls me up. Mrs. Bush, Barbara Bush, has a radio show called Storytime with Mrs. Bush where she had a literacy program. Her passion was getting kids to read.
Okay. Awesome.
And so she said she wants to do a reading with the Looney Tunes. And I do Sylvester Jr.
Father.
Oh, Father, I'm full of shame. Yeah. Look, Pop, with a giant mouth. Go get him.
And she wants to do Curious George with Sylvester and Sylvester Jr. Now, it doesn't pay a dime because it's for charity. I said, of course I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I get to the studio. She's not there. I went to, I think it was Margarita Mix. She's okay. Not there. She does her stuff in Washington, D.C. Okay, fine. I'll just do it, whatever. Like a month or two later, I get this big, thick invitation in honor of your participation in Mrs. Bush's story time. We'd like to invite you to a reception at the White House. I thought it was a joke. So I called the phone number. I said, hi. This is Sylvester Jr. calling to RSVP to the White House. And they said, thank you. Here are a couple of places where you can go and get fingerprinted, and which has to go to Sacramento. And, oh, this is real. This is totally real.
Wow.
So I took my mom, and it was the voice actors that were there. It was myself. It was Jim Cummings. It was Greg Burson, who's no longer with us. It was Russi and Wayne, who are no longer with us. It was surreal. And, you know, we got our picture taken with Mrs. Bush. And these receptions are chaperoned by Marines.
Wow.
And this Marine comes up to me, very, very proper. Uh-huh. And he goes, may I talk to you, sir? I said, sure. He goes, sir, we host these receptions every week. About a week ago, we had Prince Charles and Diana. We had Elizabeth Taylor. But wow, Porky Pig and his mother, this is big. And my mother is squeezing my leg. And he goes, would you like to meet the president? I said, he wasn't part of the reception. I said, okay.
Sure.
So he walks us to the Oval Office, and we're standing outside, and George Sr. is writing something at the desk. Mr. President, I would like to present Porky Pig and his mother from Los Angeles. And without looking up, he's like, hi, Dan. Good to see you. And we walked back into the reception, and my mom goes, I mean, you can't share the story because it just doesn't sound like it's a real thing. And then I went to the restroom. I'm telling you this for a reason. Uh-huh. And I came out, and my mom said, there's something different about you. I said, why? She goes, you're thicker. Why are you thicker? I said, Mom, the restroom has all these presidential seal hand towels and toilet paper. I'm loaded. I mean, from head to toe, wherever I had a pocket or an orifice, I had hand towels and toilet paper. And Mom said, you can't take that. I said, Mom, I'm not taking the china or the silverware.
Yeah, right.
This gets flushed. I'm going to give it away as Christmas presents this year. She goes, they're going to catch you. I said, who's going to pat me down for toilet paper and hand towels? And they were a little wrinkled, but by golly, I got rid of them.
That's fantastic. Yeah. What an amazing story. Oh,
and
man.
It all started watching Porky Pig as a five-year-old.
That's right. Oh, man. So amazing. Tell me about your process.
The creative process?
Creative process.
For characters.
For characters. Depending on how long we live in it,
yeah.
Let's do a character.
Okay.
An original character
right.
Comes in. Get the email, Bob. We need this. This is due Wednesday by 10 a.m.
Yep. So as you know, a classic character does not come up that often. So
yes.
9 out of 10 on more than that, 9 out of 10. Most auditions, they want something new.
Yeah.
So the first thing is, it's an original character. Your audition has got to sound as if that character has been around as long as the characters have been around.
Hmm.
So if you're doing a witch, you can't do Margaret Hamilton.
Yeah.
If you're doing a little boy character, they don't want SpongeBob. They don't want Bart Simpson. They want something original. So you get the script. The script may or may not have a picture, depending on the studio. A lot of studios don't send us pictures anymore. We also – everybody who's listening to this who wants to get into this, please treat every audition as if you signed a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
Don't talk about it. Don't post about it. Don't even hint about it that you read for this. Respect that they want this kept secret and then promote it when you're ready. Okay. So I get the script. Let's say it has a picture and a description and some dialogue. From all of that information – I come up with a voice. That voice is the easiest part of the process.
Mm.
I look at the physicality of the character. I look at the facial expressions. I look at the body language. I look at the specs. And sometimes I will ignore much of the specs. And sometimes I'm like, okay, there's my hint right there.
Mm.
And sometimes character traits are within the copy itself. there are certain things an actor asks for every line in that audition. And by the way, these aren't lines. These are scenes.
Mm-hmm.
A scene has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And a scene also has a scene partner. In this audition, the listener, the casting director, the producer, they're only hearing us. They're not hearing the scene partner. That scene partner is in this scene. The mistake a beginning cartoon voice actor makes when they're auditioning is they're out there doing funny voices reading lines.
Mm.
Where a well-trained actor is making acting choices. They're looking for actors first and funny voice people second.
Yeah.
So with each scene, I ask myself, who am I talking to? What is my relationship with this scene partner? And where are we?
Yeah.
If this information is not on the page, and usually it's not, there might be an adjective, confident, mischievous, concerned, etc. I have to ask why confident, why mischievous, mischievous about what? And then I have to make those acting choices. Anytime you refer to another character by name, you have a relationship with them,
yeah.
even if that relationship is a total stranger. So you have to make these choices. Who am I talking to? What is my relationship? Where are we? Where are we may not be on that page. So in my mind, I'm looking at that and I logically make a choice. It feels like – let's say the character is a teenager in high school. It feels like they're outside in a football field. So I'm going to be off the mic a little bit,
mm-hmm.
add some room noise so it sounds – has an ambiance of outside. If the next scene, it feels like they're in the school library. Well – and I'm going to do what we were talking about before. I'm going to add some room noise and talk off the mic a little bit. This is take one for the first scene. And the next scene, they're in the library. And I'm going to move into the mic and just get a little bit more intimate. Going from here to here is an audio illusion of versatility. It really is just a technical move. But when they're listening back, they're hearing these characters, these in action, in motion. Acting is reacting. So as you're performing these scenes, and you can't see me on a podcast, but I'm doing air quotes with the word scene.
You just made air quotes.
As I'm performing these scenes, I'm not just thinking about what the character sounds like. I'm thinking about what the character's doing. What is their intent and with whom? It's a lot. It's the same process that an actor makes when they're auditioning for theater. It's the same process an actor makes when they're auditioning for a commercial on camera or a sitcom or a drama. And the mistake an actor makes who doesn't know all this is, well, I just think this voice fits. The voice is one part of the equation.
Yeah.
The most important part is the acting. And then you add the layers. I call it – a character is an onion made up of many layers. And one layer might be there's a part of me that thinks that this high school kid, there's nothing in this script, as he's reacting to his scene partner – he is not confident about his intent here for some reason that his father left him with in his childhood. Literally, that's how deep I will get in these thought processes.
Yeah.
And an actor's job is to make choices. And when they listen to these auditions, even if your choice is wrong and not their intent, that bold choice will get you a callback. And at that callback, the casting director is going to say, interesting how intimate you were in the second scene. Just to let you know, you're just like, you know, kind of shooting the shit on a track, walking,
yeah.
doing laughs with a buddy. Why didn't you tell me this in the script?
Yeah, right.
They didn't. So, but the bottom line is it's the bold choice that gets you the callback, gets you in that room. When I first got into this business, that first round of auditions was with a casting director.
Oh, man.
Then – I know.
Glorious.
Then it went to your agent's office and then a callback. Today it's in your home studio.
Yeah.
Now, blessing and curse to be auditioning in your home studio. The blessing is there's nobody there to tell you what you're doing is wrong. But there's nobody there to tell you what you're doing is right.
Right.
What that means is you can't make a wrong choice. So nobody's there saying you can't do that. So you're asking what my process is. This is also part of my process. When you have an audition for a cartoon, that might have been in development for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. It has gone through so many layers of approval just to get to your home studio for an audition. The very first take I do is I honor that writer's intent.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean I don't add a layer of creativity.
Sure.
But I really do honor what they're asking for. Take two is when I take risks and what I think will get me a callback.
Mm.
And once I get that call back, they usually direct me to take one. But I need to show them, you know this, when you do animation for TV, for scale, which means the minimum they have to pay you as per SAG-AFTRA, they've got you for at least two characters.
Yeah.
So my take two is polar opposite of take one. So if I'm doing – let's say I'm playing a tough New York cabbie, okay? And
I do sort of like a Woody Hackett sort of character like this. Hey, lady, would you like a cab? Don't make me wait for you.
Take two. I might do somebody a little bit more graspy. I might even make him a little bit more blasé. And maybe this – the first guy – hey, lady, you want a cab? He really wants that tip. This guy, I don't care. Lady, do you want a cab? I'm just going to make a totally different choice. Still from New York.
Yep.
Same guy, same job, but totally different intent. You know why? I hate traffic. Now, and it may not say in the script he hates traffic.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I'm adding that intent, that choice.
Yeah.
Maybe totally wrong. I don't care.
Yeah.
But you've got to make a choice. The only mistake when it comes to choices as an actor is to not make one. That's the only mistake. You can't make a wrong choice as long as you commit to that choice. If you don't commit, a lot of times actors in the back of their mind, there's this like subconscious, I hope this is the right choice, that reads on the mic. You can't audition to please the listener. If you audition to try to get the job and please the listener, that reads in the mic. There's a sense of desperation and neediness. I always tell my students, think of your audition as a party and you're a host. And you are serving tacos. And you don't give a damn if they don't like tacos. If they want to go to Burger King after they leave your party because they don't like tacos, you don't care because you know that you are serving the best darn tacos that anybody who likes tacos has ever had.
Yeah.
Your audition is a great taco. And you are just serving it. And you love hosting this audition. And if they don't buy that audition, today's audition is an insurance policy for another one.
Yeah.
What that means is if Kiff auditions for me and I'm a casting director and I, that is so not right for this. I know they're not going to get that. This is not right. Maybe they cast the wife. You're auditioning for the husband.
Yep.
And we decided to go older with the wife. And your voice print just doesn't match the age demographic of these characters. I am going to remember you because you're so damn good. And I'm going to – and the next time you slate for me for another audition, I'm going to perk up a little bit more because you were so good that last time.
Mm.
People don't realize that brilliance doesn't book because they can only hire one. And they think I'm failing. Some people will go to coaches over and over and over – or new coaches because they're not booking. And what they don't realize is it's a numbers game. And they can't get feedback for every audition.
Yeah.
But if every – I used to think that there should be a rule to SAG-AFTRA that there's somebody in an office who just calls every actor, you didn't get it and here's why. You didn't get it and here's why. Because if we don't get it, we don't hear anything.
Yeah.
And it messes with your confidence.
You bet.
But a really good agent will say to you, you're going through the motions right now, pal. You know, you get thee to an improv class. You know, you're sounding a little stale.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you find you're not booking after a while and you call your agent, am I not hitting the mark? You're doing great. Trust me. Keep it going. I'm fortunate. I've been in the business long enough where I'm friends with a lot of casting directors.
Yeah.
And we'll go out for dinner or lunch or, you know, a cocktail after a session or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been times when I've contacted I won't mention by name
–
and said, hey, just out of curiosity, the last 12 auditions, nothing. You were on my short list. I have submitted – you were one of three people I submitted and they went with the celebrity. Or they went with somebody this, or they went with somebody that, or there was a reason why. And I once said to me, really, you're asking me this? Seriously? I'm like, well, you know, I'm also human. You know,
actors
need feedback. No matter where you are in your career.
Yeah.
What am I doing wrong if I'm not booking? So the lesson there is step outside your ego, step outside your neediness and just realize, I know I'm pretty good. And I know what I'm bad at too.
Yeah.
I'm not a good long form reader. Audiobooks, I would rather watch a grapefruit grow than sit and read a book I would not read for enjoyment. And I don't want to learn to do it and I don't want to learn to be good at it. And there are people out there, God bless you, because I listen to audiobooks. I love them.
Yeah.
And the people that do it love it.
Yes.
But it ain't my thing.
I hear you. I did it out of necessity and then found the place where I really enjoy it. It's got to be the right book. It's got to be the right sort of topic, but mm-hmm. I've gone from fiction to with lots of characters, and yeah. that's where the joy is,
right.
to deep historical nonfiction that's overwritten.
Right.
And but then the thing that keeps me in is I get to do Nixon at some point.
Oh, okay.
So like that kind of a thing, you know.
But see, that's what I like about a good audiobook narrator is yeah. – and even somebody that doesn't necessarily change their voice I tell you what really just – there were Tales of the City, the audiobook. I don't even know the actress's name. But when she was playing all the characters from Connie to Marianne to Mrs. Madrigal, and she didn't change her voice, but she changed the character. And it was like a light bulb. Oh, my God. These are good actors.
Oh, man.
These are great actors.
That's so great.
But to sit there for hour on end to do it, I don't have that skill set
yeah.
to even want to do it. So bless you people for doing
my books. I feel you. I haven't done a ton, but they've come when they've needed to come.
Sure.
And it's been the thing that's been like, you know, yeah. It's just part of the landscape. And I've always kind of wanted to or envisioned myself more as a – More Swiss Army knife-ness in this landscape.
I call it utility player.
Yeah, I like that better.
Yeah, I like Swiss Army knife better. I'm gonna steal that one. You can have utility.
Sometimes I'll take utility or Leatherman.
There you go.
That's it. That's kind of
well,
perfect.
I'll tell you, people, if you do a lot of promos, mm-hmm. they don't know if you do animation. If you do animation, they don't know if you do audiobooks.
Yeah.
Case in point, for years I was the voice of the Disney Channel.
Oh, man.
And it was a great gig. And my very first day – and I signed like a 2-year contract.
Okay.
My very first day, the producer says to me, I have a question. And if the answer is no, you still have a job here. But are you at all comfortable with character voices? And my engineer – his name was Steve Barton, still is Steve Barton, bless his heart. He knew what I had done for a living and he looks – at this producer, he goes, do you have any idea what he does? And the producer goes, no. Well, the thing is, they don't.
Yeah.
Disney Television didn't know I did features and vice versa.
Oh, man.
So I said, yeah, I'm comfortable with characters. Why? And he goes, because every once in a while, we might have a character in a promo. And if you're not comfortable, I'm not going to ask you to do it. I said, oh, no, I think I can handle it. Yeah, I can do that. That'd be fine.
I love it. I do love that utility aspect to what we get to do.
I love that every day is different.
Yeah.
Even the auditions.
Yes.
You know, I've got 12 auditions to do. Here's a Taco Bell radio spot. Here's a brand new game. Here's a new character in an existing cartoon.
Yeah.
And that variety
yeah.
in opportunity, even in just the audition process. People ask me, I'm sure they ask you, do you practice? Yeah, I call it an audition.
Yeah.
Every day of my life I'm practicing. Before I had an agent, I had my little portable cassette recorder and I would practice voices all day long. Today, my practice is trying to get a gig.
Yeah.
But I'm still practicing. If you're not at a point where you're making a living at this, you don't want your auditions to be your practice. So you got to stay in classes.
Right.
You know when you're going to organically be quitting the classes, be quitting the day jobs. And by the way, if I've got a big promo gig, I will be calling Dave Walsh. I will be calling Jeff Howell. I will be calling some of the best coaches out there
yep.
and work with them. David Lyerly, who's no longer coaching. He works in games now, but he was an agent at Atlas. And he was my go-to coach anytime I had a big promo audition because he was honest. He would hear my habits and he would nail me on them right away.
Oh, that's so great.
But that's what a good coach does.
And being able to work in that space of the freedom of like, oh, I'm going to call Walsh and get, you know, get a private,
yeah.
do this thing,
yeah.
record at that space with him, listening
right.
to my audition so I don't have to go home and then, you know, try to recreate what I did with the coach.
No kidding. Well, I think
you know?
It's important for people who are looking to get into this to hear that a veteran voiceover actor
yeah.
still works out with a coach. You know, yeah. a Broadway performer who's performing at night until 10:30, 11 o'clock might sleep till noon, but from 1 to 2, they're in dance class.
Yeah.
They're in voice class. They're working that instrument. You know, they're always – I mean, I hear stories that Dustin Hoffman and Pacino will get together and read scripts. Why? To stay loose. Jay Leno still to this day goes around to little clubs.
Have you been down to see his show down in not Redondo. Yeah, Redondo.
Yes.
Or Hermosa.
Hermosa, exactly.
We went down and Larry Miller did 8 minutes
That's
before
right.
he got up. And it was an amazing set to
Jay
watch
Leno,
him just.
Jay Leno banked everything he made on The Tonight Show and lived off of the stand-up. And he worked out. He went to the stand-up route was his gym.
Yeah.
So he was ready for performing five nights a week on television. I don't think people realize that those at the top work their butts off to stay there every single day.
There's this the movie Death Race with Jason Statham. There's a behind-the-scenes sequence where they're someone at craft service on set is walking around handing out someone's birthday cake.
Right.
And they go over to Statham and they hand him his treat, which is some thinly sliced turkey breast, cauliflower, and red pepper.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah, here's my cake.
Yeah.
This is my cake, everybody. And it's a funny bit, but it just underscores how hard that guy has to work to be able to maintain what he is known for.
Right.
And that is, you know, that muscle definition when he's doing the, you know, the pull-ups. And it, like, even in something as forgettable as both that movie, I love it, but like the supplementals, like it's just a constant reminder of the people who are at the top of their game work to sustain it. And there isn't any sitting back and resting.
And there's no shortcuts.
That's right.
You know, there are no – if you want success in life – I'm not talking voiceover. In life, there are no shortcuts. You've got to want it more than anybody else. You say what more? What else? What more? What else? Every single day.
Yeah.
You know, when I go to a session, I love ensemble work. You know, in animation, if it's episodic or TV, they'll have as many cast members as possible. For an animated feature, it's me and the director, you know? But there's a lot more time with a feature because it's 1 to 5 years versus it'll take 2 to 4 hours to do a 30-minute cartoon. But that creative process and, you know, to work with people with studios like Pixar and Disney and Sony and Fox, I'm blessed.
Yeah.
But man, that creative process, you know, it's definitely collaborative because they know what they want, but they're always asking us, help us make it better.
Yeah. Well, it's that moment in improvisation where I might have a great idea, but the idea that you throw out is going to take this into a totally different, fascinating place that we get to go together.
Because that's what improv is.
That's it.
It's going down a road. You don't deny and you just go with the flow.
Right. Agree.
A really good writer will admit they hire an actor to make their work better than they ever thought it could be.
Mm.
And that, now, that when I say take risks and be creative, honor that director. I'm rather that writer. But there are so many ways to interpret what that writer's offering us.
Yeah. Well, like you said something really profound earlier that really resonated with me. And it was in your description of the of how you look at that description and then look at these different words, these adjectives that describe the character.
Yeah.
But then the question after of why are – okay, confused, confident, mysterious. But why are they that?
Yeah.
And that – wealth of that pool of answers to that question to get at these sort of we look at those things as facts and just say, oh, well, they just are.
Mm-hmm.
But by asking that question gives you so many more choices to inform your bold choice.
And once you lay that down, they don't hear that those layers of choices, the pre-life that you're creating, that backstory that you're creating, but it makes a solid, powerful read. Tom Hanks has been very vocal. He was on the Graham Norton show talking about what it was like to work on Toy Story, the Toy Story movies. And he's like, oh, it's so hard. You're in the booth. You know, you're on one side of the glass. They're on the other side of the glass. You do a line and you just – they don't push the talk back button and they're just talking back and forth and you're thinking, oh my God, they're going to hire Dustin Hoffman for this. I'm so wrong for this. They hate everything I'm doing. They're ordering lunch.
Right.
They're talking about what did you get on Amazon today. They're not talking about this performance. But I love that Tom Hanks was insecure on that side of the glass. He was also discussing that – the reason why playing Woody was so hard is, as an on-camera actor, he never realized how much he relied on what that camera was picking up on a glance or a look or just a moment or maybe an eye-watering, you know, just for the camera to pick it up because a good actor can just make their eye water.
Sure.
Where a voice actor has to go has to vocalize that. It may not be in the script. It may be between the lines, but I need to find a choice somewhere in this line that I'm holding back a tear. It's another thing I tell my students. If you're getting emotional, don't cry. Hold back that tear. Because that holding back that tear is going to show. I know that it says upset, but boy, why are you upset and why don't you want to show it? That's going to be more interesting than the person who's just crying hysterically or the person who is trying to control themselves and it just creeps out. Now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
In your face, obvious, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that choice, but you're telling a story.
Yeah.
Acting and reacting, find a place where it's not just obvious. It's not just stereotypical cliche. You were asking me about my process earlier. Can I tell you another process story? I've told this story before, but
that's okay.
You never know who listens to what.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my process if there's a script and there's a picture and there's a description and whatnot. I got a call to go to Disney years ago to work on a movie called The Emperor's New Groove.
Uh-huh.
And I was just told I'm playing a squirrel. No audition, just you're playing a squirrel. And I go to the session and Mark Dindal is the director.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, okay, so let me tell you a little bit about this character. So there's a character named Kronk. And he's kind of like the comic relief. He speaks squirrel. And he says squeak, squeak, and squeak, squeak. And you make squirrel noises, and he translates it. And I said, okay, so you want me to say squeak, squeak, and squeak, squeak? And no, you have to create a squirrel language. I said, okay. But I'm basically saying what he's translating. Okay. And I said, can I think about this for a little bit? And he goes, yeah. So I walk out of the stage, and Disney Studios looks like a beautiful park. If you ever saw Saving Mr. Banks?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was Disney. And, you know, park benches and beautiful grass. And it's like stepping back in time.
Yeah, it really is.
And I'm sitting on this park bench, and I'm thinking, squeak, squeak, squeaking, squeak, squeak. What the heck does that mean? And I swear to you, buddy, a little squirrel came running down a tree, came up to me, and stood on its hind legs, looked at me with an acorn. And he went, and went, thank you. So I went into the studio. I said to Mark, I said, so you do, you be Mark. Say squeak, squeak, and squeak, squeak.
Okay. So are you ready, Bob? Here we go. Take one.
Say.
Okay. Squeak, 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 and squeak.
And he was like, got it. So here's how I created the intent behind the sounds I was making. If Kronk's translation was,
uh-huh, right, all right, he says he was walking down a dirt road and he saw a llama, and the llama spit at him.
I'm reading that bit about the dirt road and the llama. So I'm literally making squirrel noises by reading his translation.
Yeah.
Again, it's improv. It's organic creative process. It's a director who's respecting that I don't know what the heck I'm doing with this character until I get some kind of inspiration.
Yeah.
I didn't audition for it, so I didn't know where to start from.
And in a weird way, there's even more pressure on that because you haven't proven yourself. Someone just said, oh, here's Bob. He's got this on lock for you. So then you're walking in and that confidence game part of it too kicks in along with approaching it like an actor,
right,
and looking at how does this gibberish character fit into the storytelling
and
how can I support it?
And so that one day of let me figure out what I'm doing – they did, you know, some test market screenings and the audience liked the squirrel. So they said, let's write some more stuff. So they wrote some more stuff and they brought me back. That film led to a straight-to-video sequel, which led to 3 years on a series based on the film.
Oh, my gosh.
So seriously, this goes back to, guys, if your agent says it's a small part, do you want it? The answer is sure.
Yeah.
Unless you'd rather do laundry and watch Young and the Restless – go do the small part because you never know what it's going to lead to. And
that's
I've had
right.
people, you know, you go to fan conventions at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have my table and I've got the Porky Pig and the Tweety and the stuff. And when I first started doing that, I brought what I thought were the important characters.
Yeah.
The well-known Looney Tunes. And I would have people come up to me and go, do you have Bucky from Emperor's New Groove? I'm like, do you even know I did that? Oh, yeah. Do you have No Face from Spirited Away? You know I did that? Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know my own body of work.
Do you have the character of the little boy from Akira?
Gosh.
Little blue boy?
So, dude, you know that.
I know that.
That was my first anime job. Yeah. I don't even know his name.
I don't remember.
Like Mitsubishi Manischewitz or something like that.
It was something like.
But I remember when I did it. He was a little floating blue boy in a bubble or something like that. And I remember looking at him and I said, he kind of looks like baby Marlon Brando. And
so I just did this Marlon Brando. I remember, you can't run away or something like that. And I said, he looked like Marlon Brando.
And the director was Tom Weiner. Oh my God, I just pulled that name out of nowhere.
Wow.
And he goes, he's a kid. I said,
he looks like Marlon Brando.
Okay, we'll keep him as Marlon Brando. That works for me.
Oh man, dude, this has just been glorious. Thank you so much.
This
for
is so much
time.
Fun.
Tell me quickly, how can people study with you? Take your both find you on social media and reach out and that kind of stuff, as well as learn from you in classes and that kind of stuff.
My LA class has a 4-year waiting list.
Yes.
I mean, I tell people, get on it.
Yeah.
You know, you're welcome to get on it. But what happens is, and this has been happening lately because it's such a long list. By the way, I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm so good. I've got a long list. There aren't that many animation voiceover teachers in Los Angeles. But there are some good ones.
Yeah.
Mick Wingert. Richard Horvitz, Debbie Derryberry, Charlie Adler, Michael Bell when he's teaching. I don't even know if Michael's teaching anymore. But there are some great teachers, and I always say study with everybody.
Yeah.
But I do 3 classes a year, 8 people per class, 4 men, 4 women.
Oh, man.
So sometimes I have to go call 60 names before I find 8 that either are still interested in voiceover after 4 years, have the funds, and lately in some cases – alive. I've made some phone. Hi, is John there? No, John passed away 2 years ago. Who's this? Oh my God. Now that I have tremendous Jewish guilt when that happens. But get on my wait list. I do weekend classes around the country. When is this going to be on? Do you know?
I'm going to air it tonight.
Oh,
so
great.
This,
okay.
But you're going to be – I think you're in Dallas?
No.
Denver.
I'm in Nashville.
Nashville.
Yeah, I'm in Nashville the first weekend in November with Mary Lynn Wissner and I believe Jeff Howell.
Yeah.
And it's a triple threat. It's commercial, promo, and animation.
The VO Roadshow, right?
VO Roadshow is what it's called, yeah. Mary Lynn Wissner at Voices Voice Casting or arranges it. Now, here's the thing. All these things are limited space. So when they're booked, they're booked. So if you're in Nashville, you know, get on this.
Yeah.
How can they reach me? On Instagram, it should be one for everything, but it's not. Bergen.Bob is Instagram.
Okay.
Twitter is at Bob Bergen. I'm on Facebook. Just find me. I also, you know, just – I have a website. Email me. I answer everything. You know?
Do you LinkedIn? Are you in the LinkedIn
space? LinkedIn.
Space?
Yeah, but that's for corporate.
How do you navigate that space? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah. So that could be a whole other podcast. But for LinkedIn, that's where I'm going to network with network executives, executive producers, the people who are higher than the day-to-day people that I work with, the advertising executive. And I will just connect with them. Just a connection.
Yeah.
I happen to have an agent who thinks that it's very valuable to market. I market every day of my life. If I'm not working or auditioning, I am a 9 to 5 marketer.
Mm-hmm.
And I might go to LinkedIn. Let's say do you do radio imaging at all?
Yeah, I've auditioned for – I got close on a couple, but I don't do much of it.
So I might say, you know what? I've got nothing to do. I've got creativity ADD. I cannot do one thing for a very long time. That's why I love the variety in what we read for.
Yeah, yeah.
So I might sit down and go, you know, today I want to market my Best of the 80s demo to any Best of the 80s station in Florida. And I will first go to Google and find the stations.
Uh-huh.
And I will connect with all the program directors on LinkedIn. Actually, everything but LinkedIn specifically. And once I'm connected with them on LinkedIn, I can find how to get to them.
Yeah.
And then I will send them my demo. But okay, I'm going to tell a secret, but it's okay because I can't imagine everybody in my career is listening to this. Here's a marketing email from me. It's a lie. Dear Joe Schmo, my Aunt Sylvia lives in your market and loves your station. I don't know why the 80s are her thing, but she loves the 80s. But she knows I'm a voiceover actor and she keeps saying to me, you've got to get on this station. please, make my Aunt Sylvia happy as well as my accountant. I would love you to listen to my demo. I have no Aunt Sylvia. I make that whole thing up. But they find it a joke. They enjoy it, you know? Yeah. And if they believe it, that's terrific.
Yeah. But again, it speaks to – it's so fascinating. That letter speaks to your detail,
right,
the way you approach your all creative endeavors.
Right.
And it feeds that particular muscle regardless of whether you're reading for a character that's established, reading for a Taco Bell radio spot, or advertising yourself to a program director in South Florida.
Well, so I'm bold. I don't care if I hear the word no. So we had the Emmys last week. We talked about that walking in. And I'm at a little bar before the awards, and I'm talking to all the nominees, and it's the producers of Bob's Burgers. I've never worked on Bob's Burgers in my life. My real name is Bob Burger. Okay? So I walked up to this producer, and I'd had a little bit of a bourbon, so I was a little loose. And I said, now listen. And I pulled out my driver's license because I haven't changed my name legally. I said, my name is Bob Burger. My professional name is Bob Bergen. I should be on your show. I mean, I was born to be on your show. And he's like, oh, my God, that is so – who's your agent? I said, Heather Dame at Atlas Town. He goes, I know Heather. Oh, thank you. Here's my card. Follow up. It starts with a schmooze, with a conversation. The worst thing they're going to do is go, who's the crazy guy drinking bourbon with the name of our show that's spelled differently?
Yeah.
But he didn't.
Fantastic.
Got to take risks.
Got to take risks.
Yeah. I risked getting here because I didn't know if I was going to because I kept driving in circles.
And then I risked telling you to sit in a Ralph's parking lot. I didn't know how you're going to react.
There you go. And then I risked leaving the parking lot going, I'm going to find this
place.
I'm
going to find it. And you did.
I did.
And we found ourselves sitting
and we were
here.
Actually across the street from each other on our cell phones going, I think I'm near. I am too.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm so grateful for
– this was so much fun.
Taking the time and coming in and thank you so much, and best of luck. Do you have anything coming out that you can promote show-wise?
We are doing 200 new Looney Tunes shorts.
Oh, my gosh.
That will be – one was just released for Oscar consideration for this year, but HBO Max is going to air most of them, and it'll eventually go to Cartoon Network and whatnot. What can I talk about? What can't I talk about? I can't talk about that series. I can't talk about that game. I can't talk about – I got four features I'm working on right now. I can't talk about a dang
–
that's the problem.
Yep.
You know, and in fact, I have a publicist who gets mad at me because I can't publicize. But on the air right now, I've got new Looney Tunes. I think they've aired like 2 out of 5 seasons or 3 seasons, whatever. Marvel's Avengers Assembled is playing. There's tons of stuff. But the bottom line is, as you know, they want to keep everything as top secret as possible.
Yeah.
So we can't really talk about the bulk of what we're doing.
Well, then let me throw this a different direction. Rather than talk about what you can't talk about, what is something that you've read, seen, heard recently that really inspired you or spoke to your creative either process or just your joy? What's something that you've watched you were like, oh, that was great? Or
oh, you know, it's interesting. I do that almost every day of my life with audition, so I can't think of one specific thing.
Oh, not audition. Like like last night, my wife and I watched Midsommar.
Oh, okay.
And it's horrifying.
Yep.
But also there's a moment in that film that was one of the most beautiful,
mm-hmm,
cathartic,
mm-hmm,
scenes of empathy and emotion that I've ever seen in a film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was spectacular.
Okay. I have that all the time because I love rewatching movies that I love.
Yeah.
So – and I was talking about this just the other day. I'm going to tear up talking about it.
That's right.
It was the scene in Forrest Gump where he realizes that Jenny had his baby and he met his son. And he just – I'm getting emotional. And he looks at her and he just says, is he smart? And I was like, oh, my God, the honesty in that moment. And I think a lot of actors only get those moments in a class because they just don't get the opportunity in their life or their career to have – that moment. So it doesn't matter where that moment is, whether it's in class or in improv or if you're fortunate to be in a Paramount picture.
Yeah.
But when you can have that moment, that is what this is all about.
Yeah.
Not the check that came a month later, but that moment when Tom Hanks goes, is he smart? Because that was what was important to Tom to Gump, because Gump was a simpleton. He wasn't smart. He was brilliant. He didn't realize it.
Yeah, and there was never any moment in the film that was ever addressed,
mm-hmm,
that he ever mentioned.
Yeah.
Except for you knew. See, now you got me going on. But, like, you knew that that tape was always running in the back of his head.
Oh, my God.
That awareness of it.
Yeah.
That Forrest had that awareness.
It's the scene.
Just beautiful.
It's the scene in Terms of Endearment with Shirley MacLaine screaming at the nurses, give my daughter the shot.
Yeah.
This conflicted relationship that they had, this yin and this yang. But when push came to shove, she didn't want her daughter hurting, even though she'd hurt her daughter throughout her entire life.
Yeah.
It's Henry Fonda trying to explain why he didn't come back with berries, because he didn't want to admit that he forgot where they were, where they lived.
Yeah.
Those acting moments that, you know, a movie is a masterclass.
Yeah.
A really good acting performance to another actor is a masterclass.
Yeah.
Allow yourself to learn every time you see a piece of brilliance. And sometimes it might just be in a black box theater on Santa Monica Boulevard.
That's right. Or a radio spot.
Yeah.
Or just something that it's there. You're surrounded by them, and it takes shifting your focus to open up to receive them.
Or watching D. Bradley Baker change his body language and put his hands in his nostrils to make that creature sound.
Oh, man.
That comes from his toenails through his earlobes. And at the same time, you can hear that creature is empathetic because he's playing empathy with that sound. And holy cow, that is as brilliant as anything you will see Meryl Streep do.
Yep. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Bergen, thank you so much.
This was fun, buddy.
This was awesome.
Did we get a good level? Are you guys ready to record now?
Are you ready to go?
Okay.
All right, perfect.
Wouldn't that suck if he said, oh, did you want to record this? I thought you guys were just getting levels.
I thought that's why you got this space, to have a quiet conversation.
That's right. Exactly.
Thanks so much for listening. Catch us soon. More episodes to come. Peace. This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at Kiff VH, or on Instagram at Kiff VH, or on Vero at Kiff VH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.
Werewolf?
Yeah.